This is Lead Stories. I'm Eatrice Lead. And a lot's happening today. Well, the press is licking its lips. The media, I should say, are licking their lips, anticipating a bout with Joe Biden as he stages his first news conference today, later on today. And they're taunting him. They're trying to get him all discombobulated. And in some cases, they're laying in wait just because they want to carve him up right there on television. But I don't think he's going to go for that. I think he's going to stage his news conference or his press briefing in a different way. And I suspect why. I think the tension might bring on, or at least this is the what they're guarding against, it might bring on a stutter, a consistent stutter in Joe Biden, and he may not want to be seen that way on television. I think also that he just does not want to be the sacrificial lamb, and the media, especially those media outlets that were decidedly pro-Trump, are waiting for him. And they're hoping to sandbag him, but I don't think that would work. But I think the greater consideration here is that Biden doesn't want to slip up. He doesn't want that stutter to come back and make him look less than capable and less than in charge. And we'll see. We'll see what happens later tonight. But a couple of things I want to bring to your attention. History was made on Monday. I don't know if you know that. In Evanston, Illinois. What history? Well, it became the first U.S. city to make reparations available to its Black residents for past discrimination and the lingering effects of slavery, it was reported. That's big news. Very big news. Now, how are they going to make reparations, having made history and everything? They're going to use the tax revenues that they will be collecting, the city will be collecting, from recreational marijuana in order to help African Americans whose families have suffered past discrimination. Isn't that nice? Isn't that really generous? Isn't that really dignified? That is history making. And so far, there's a pot of money available to start the first cycle of reparations, a whole $25,000. Can you imagine that? $25,000. My gosh, that's big money. And they've already put stipulations on it. The $25,000 that supposedly is now available for reparations. It will be allocated to 16 African American residents, and presumably the focus of this generous amount of money for reparations, as you understand, will go for housing subsidies. What a history-making thing. following that, I don't know if you can stand anymore, but I have to offer it to you. I'm so generous. The Jesuit Catholic community will be raising $100 million to atone for slave labor and the sales of slaves. Listen to that. The sales of slaves for more than a century, including the slaves who were dragged into service in building Georgetown University in 1838. I think it is so noble. But it leads me to ask a question. We ought to be having a national discussion, don't you think, about reparations, since everybody is all into reparations? The speed is on to get the United States, get its soul cleaned up. And the best way to do that, of course, is to throw some money around. I have to ask you, what do you understand reparations to be or to mean? That's a basic question. What is this thing called reparations? What is it supposed to be? What is it supposed to do? And for whom are reparations to be offered? Who can lay claim to reparations? For what purpose will there be reparations? I need some guidance. So naturally, I turn to you. You guys know everything. So I'm asking you the question, what do you understand this thing called reparations? What do you understand it to be? What is it for? What will it do? How will it do it? You have any idea? 888-874-4888. I'm hoping you call in with an idea about reparations, because I'm confused. I'm very confused about that word. I'm very confused about everybody suddenly having a penchant for reparations now. Is it time to talk about reparations? Because, you know, this country does have a heart, and it does have a conscience, and it does recognize its duty to right wrongs. Okay, 888-874-4888. You can tell how enthusiastic I am about this. But we have to engage this question nationally, because we are about to get the national con. The con game is on. Henry from Chicago, what do you understand reparations to be?
Hey, Trish, how's it going?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. All righty. You know, obviously, Evanston being a, you know, just right outside of Chicago, I've been following this real close. But I wanted to make a correction on the report that you had. Reparations was not based off of slavery. It was based off of redlining that was happening in Evanston. So that's why they were offered the reparations for the redlining that's been happening.
I was reading the media reports.
Okay.
This is what the media said reparations will be for.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think somebody made a mistake on that, but because I was just listening to an interview of one of the all the women who spearheaded that in Evanston, and she basically established that it was for the redlining that was happening in Evanston. So whoever wrote that made a mistake, but you know, that's from the mouth of an official from Evanston. So, but
well, thank you.
Yeah. So the thing
question
is,
still stands, though. What is this thing called reparations? What do you understand it to be?
So reparations is supposed to be, it's supposed to be a form of repair of damages that have been done to a particular people, in this case, particularly black people in this country. And I guess, you know, the conversation being had now about reparations is, you know, what type of compensation should be given to black people in this country in regards to how this repair should be handled. And you know, with us as black people in this country, you know, we've been subjugated and terrorized for, you know, 500 years, and you know, how could you put a price on all of that, you know, all of that damage and terrorism that, you know, that we've endured? So, but you know, obviously the conversation is coming into light in the political sense. So it's supposed to be about repairing. But I don't see a lot of the solutions of repairing, all these, you know, the conversation of how, you know, how much should we get as a people individually, or, you know, what is reparations? Is it a form of a payout? Is it a form of education? Is it a form of, you know, not paying taxes? And, you know, it is also becoming very contentious too, within the black community, because, you know, now you got a faction of people that call themselves American descendants of slaves who feel like, you know, they deserve the reparations outside of, you know, black people who immigrated here from the Caribbean or from Africa. And now that conversation has come into light, and it's become very, very contentious on now who gets it. You know, so you got groups like in Cobra, you got the ADOS group fighting each other. Now you got this new faction called Foundation of Black Americans. And it is just a big mess, you know. So it's supposed to be about repair, but it, you know, just the conversation alone is very divisive, and it's not even repairing anything.
No, this doesn't sound like repairs to me.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, the conversation alone is just dividing folks, and it's like, oh God, you know. And it shouldn't even be the first conversation should not be if we deserve it or not. I mean, that shouldn't even be on the table. But you know, it's just the fact that, you know, I was just listening to somebody yesterday from Encobra talking about the whole thing, and while I have my issues with, you know, with the ADOS group, it's like, you know, he was kind of like spewing the same thing that the ADOS group was spewing about non-American blacks, you know, getting reparations, and it is just a mess.
So in light of what you just said, and you just are, you know, talking at the tip of the iceberg at this moment, what is going to come of all of these things that we're hearing about reparations, including and especially from the U.S. government?
Well, I think what's to come is what you're seeing in Evanston. And I think there's another town that's supposed to be giving reparations to their black citizens. But I think you're going to start seeing more of this come to fruition. What needs to happen is that there needs to be more pressure on the government as a whole to pay, you know, to at least somewhat pay out reparations to all of the black citizens of this country. Now, unfortunately, because of the fact that we're not codified in our efforts, you know, because of the fact that we're fighting over who deserves it amongst black people, whether it be descendants of slaves or not, you know, that's never going to happen. So what you're going to see is that these the U.S. government is going to be let off the hook and let these local municipalities take care of the reparations problem. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not going to be nearly enough of what of the damage that has been done to black people in this country.
Well, when we talk about reparations, automatically we're talking about black people. Is that fair?
Yes, I think it. I think it's very fair because.
What about Native Americans? What about poor whites who also were enslaved in the United States?
Well, from my understanding, Native Americans did get some form of reparations. Now, do you want to call it fair? I don't know, but there was a process that they did get some form of reparations in their sense. And, you know, I believe Japanese people for their internment in World War II got theirs. The Jewish people got some form of payout and reparations as well. And the only group of people that have been, you know, mistreated in terrorized in a sense in this country that didn't get any form of reparations is black people. So not to say that these other people don't deserve, you know, reparations, but they did get some form of it. And black people, unfortunately, have been left out in the cold.
Well, you see, it's a very complex thing because you also have it's very political. Many blacks did not and still do not want to admit to their lineage from slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So they are not part, or they don't want to be part of that discussion. Many whites are insisting on having a place at the table. Latinos, Native Americans, everybody who can point to subjugation and exploitation as a people, as a specifically identifiable people, are juggling and jostling for equal treatment, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are a race-based society, that is the history of the United States, are we going to see an insistence on a racial purity standard to basically qualify people for reparations?
Well, this is the argument that has been going on with black people in this country in regards to identity, you know, and this is the problem that we have, and this is why we can't move this conversation forward, because, you know, we're confused about our identity. And, you know, yes, black Americans have a unique identity in regards to other African people within the diaspora, you know, who come here. We have a unique identity as descendants of Africans who were enslaved, and we have a different experience than, say, you know, brothers and sisters on the continent, you know, and brothers and sisters on the Caribbean, you know. And I know you as well, you are, you know, you're from the Caribbean, and you you know, when you talk about your upbringing, you know, it's a lot different from a lot of us who have been here, you know, in the United States. Not to say that, you know, you and your family haven't been, you know, racially subjugated in your own islands, but it's a little different here than it is, you know, in other parts of the world. So there is a need for some sort of identity for us to have and to establish that if we're going to move this conversation forward. Because if it is part of, if the conversation is about reparations for slavery, then yes, there needs to be some sort of established identity, some process of, you know, who is qualified as a descendant of a slave in order to move this forward.
Okay, you got us started very, very capably. Thank you so much, Henry, for calling in. Ed from Queens, you're on the air at 888-874-4888. We're talking about reparations.
Good afternoon, Chief. How you doing?
Okay, Ed, how are you?
I'm good. Checking my thumbs, and we're still hanging. Before I start, let me just put out a disclaimer. I consider myself a member of the ADOS movement. I have been actively involved in it since 2015.
Please tell us that means.
American Descendants of Slaves. ADOS means American Descendants of Slaves. That means what the ADOS movement is, it was founded by Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore. They're two political activists, male and female. And their claim is that we are a specific group and we are entitled to reparations. What are reparations? Reparations are the reparative justice that needs to be applied to a group of individuals that were ostracized by government and by society of a specific nation based on race, religion, or creed. And that's what ADOS means. We have a platform that specifically identifies your lineage. If you would have a parent or a grandparent or a great-grandparent, basically, that can go back at least two or three generations in American history, to identify yourself as an ADOS individual, American descendant of slaves. A lot of people have problems with that. I heard Henry from Chicago. But it's very clear we have, as African Americans in this country, we have a specific claim and right to this country's wealth. We were involuntary participants in the making of this country, in turning this country into a superpower. We were involuntary participants in the cultivation and theft of the wealth of this country, and we have a specific right, and we have a specific lineage, and we can prove that lineage. Reparations is reparative justice. It's to make me whole. Simply as put, I want to be made whole. Every other immigrant that has come to this country has been afforded the opportunity to be made whole. Malcolm X said it best, white in America is different from white all around the world. It implies a certain amount of privilege and a certain amount of monetary, social, and ethical capital that you are afforded in this country. And African Americans, descendants of slaves, were systematically and institutionally blocked out of it. From redlining, which is part of the reparations in Indiana, to education, to physical brutality, to actual death. We were locked out of the mechanisms that allowed the basic populace of this country to become wealthy, to become prosperous, to become educated, to become quote-unquote American. And we played a key factor in making America what it is. From historic Benjamin Banneker, from the building of Washington, D.C., after it was destroyed in the 1800s. So there is a litany of things that American descendants of slaves contributed to this country, and we have a claim for reparative justice. And that's all it is. What we're getting now is the smokescreen because it's politically sexy. But in COBRA, ADOS, there's been many people that have been at this movement for years and have dedicated their lives to it. And it is a legitimate claim. There has been gross atrocities committed against African-American people in this country. And we are a specific group. As it was stated by the previous caller, Indians have a form of reparations, reservations, the ability to set up casinos, the ability to have tax-free zones. The Japanese got reparations for the internment camps of World War II. The Jewish people have gotten reparations directly from Germany and Switzerland, the banks that held the money from World War II when the Nazis were running amok. So there are legitimate claims for this. We have a legitimate claim. Where's my 40 acres and a mule? That was promised by this government. So, I mean, I don't understand where all the confusion lies. The confusion lies in the presentation and the misunderstanding of this being a handout. It's not a handout. It's a debt, and it's old, and it should be paid.
Now, how do you quantify that debt, and how do you quantify what you're owed?
There are several ways to quantify it. I mean, it could be cash. It could be monetary recompense. It could be educational opportunity. It could be housing opportunity. It could be empowerment zones for businesses. It could be educational grants to descendants of slaves that allows you to go to school. It could be a small business loan reinvesting in the African-American community. The black farmers. We went from 2.5 million black farmers in this country in I believe in 1939 to less than 400,000 now. There are myriad of opportunities. If you look at H.R. 440, the John Conyers bill. Come on, this discussion, there are many avenues for this to go. The discussion has already been had. It's just being rehashed every time somebody wants to throw, quote, as you're quoting David, a political bone out to the populace to stir up trouble. But H.R. 440, and COBRA has a platform, ADOS has a platform. There are several platforms with viable points. COBRA has a 14-point platform. We have a 10-point platform. It can be incorporated. There's no reason that this can't be addressed.
What will be or what is the mechanism for negotiation?
Well, the ideal mechanism would be the Continental Congress. The ideal mechanism would be the legislative bodies that are present now. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. I mean, it's largely fallen in the public forum for this discussion, and that's where it dies. And until we establish some parameters, some guidelines, until we acknowledge some of these platforms and present them in a unified front to the legislative body, we're not going to get anywhere. I like to use what's available. We have the House of Congress, we have the House of Senate, we have resolution on the floor. Let's work from there. This what's happening in Indiana is a start. It's not perfect, but at least it's an acknowledgement. You know, I know they're taking from marijuana funds. I mean, you know, the Kennedys got in White House from bootlegging. So I'll take it from wherever it comes. I just want a legitimate effort and a legitimate program presented for these reparations because they're long overdue, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's time that the discussion become very public and anticipate that there are lots of things that people don't know and would need information on, because we have some other things already showing up that are threatening the integrity of your argument. One is the intensification of racial animus in the United States. Nobody wants to give black folks anything, even if they deserve it. So you have to anticipate that, but just the same, the discussion needs to proceed. If indeed there is legitimacy, and I believe there is legitimacy to the demand for reparations, but the equation has to be tweaked from going from asking to demanding. This is what has to be done. This is what nothing less than this will we accept.
Well, that's where, as far as ADOS is concerned, not that I'm a general spokesman for them, but I've been involved with this since 2015, and I've read all literature. I've been to some of the rallies. I've even spoken with Ms. Yvette Cardinal in person at one of the conferences. And we are demanding. We have a specific demand, and that demand is our ancestors built this country. It's not an emotional appeal. It's not some type of avarice or bragging. It's an actual fact, and you can look throughout history and see the cultivation of this country as a superpower was directly linked to slavery. The incarnation of capitalism in this country is still directly linked to slavery. And many institutions, from educational institutions such as Harvard and Georgetown to insurance institutions such as Geico, which were at one time insured slaves in another incarnation. There are clear lines to the fact that a debt is owed. And until the debt is paid, I honestly believe, not to be esoteric, this country will never be right. And it will always have problems.
I have not yet seen a quantifying of the debt. It's been spoken about in general terms or asking people to see the logic of it, that's fine. But I have been waiting and looking to see the money, the estimation of the wealth contributed or stolen from African Americans by force of slavery.
Not to cut you off, but Thomas Pinkerton, a known economist, and there's another economist, I can't recall his name at the time, Yvette Cardinal and Antonio Moore, have laid out a tentative 10-point program on how to quantify and put a dollar value. Thomas Pinkerton actually put a dollar value on it in one of his books. I'll have to look in my library and see. Maybe on Freestyle Friday, I'll have the exact the title of the book. But he laid a dollar value on what reparations would be and how they could be calculated. The math is out there. I'm not saying, you know, I'm informed because I choose to be informed. But the math is out there. The mechanics are out there. The structure is out there. It's just the structure is choosing to be ignored because this country is still a white supremacist country in its institution and in its founding. And they don't never the country on the whole doesn't want to accept the moral guilt of slavery. And that, once that's accepted, then we can move forward. Just like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. Once we have accepted that fact that, yes, wealth in this country is directly tied to the oppression of a specific group of people, then we can move forward. Until that point, that's what we need. We need some truth and reconciliation. We need some honest discussion about how race and prejudice is systematically built into the foundations of this country.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. It was a mini lecture. A very compact presentation. Thank you so much for that. Duke from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice.
Hello.
Okay, I'm going to talk quick so somebody, because I called yesterday. I agree with everything that Ed just said, pretty much. I just want to make one point, and Henry from Chicago mentioned this, how the discussion starts getting all complicated. And so, for example, according to what I understood Ed just said about the ADOS, it's called? Okay.
Yes.
You have to be an American descendant of a slave. In other words, you have to have some kind of direct proof of that lineage. And if that's the parameter for what that particular group is laying out for reparations, I wouldn't support that. What did you say about somebody, let's say, I don't know your family, but let's say, for example, a family came here from Jamaica in the 1920s. Now, they were not American slaves, but if that family first came here in the 20s, they certainly suffered from the American system. And they, do you understand what I'm saying, Eutrice?
Yes, but I want to know where you're going.
And I'm just making that point is to kind of put a check on what Ed was just saying, that reparations should apply only to people who are American descendants of slaves directly.
Well, presumably, the same process would apply in Jamaica.
No, but we're not talking about Jamaica. We're talking about America and the American government's reparations.
Right. If it is that you have a movement developing within the United States concerning the descendants of slaves, of enslaved people in America, what's preventing the same movement or something like it cropping up everywhere there was slavery?
Oh, yes, it could. And I mean, there's been talk about that. It's not just Black Americans who are talking about reparations. That people are having that conversation all over the planet. But I'm saying in terms of the process here in this country, you simply can't. To exclude someone like the case that I just laid out, to exclude someone who is the descendant of a family who came from somewhere else early in the American process, like I said, 1910, 1920s or something like that, your great-grandfather...
That's not really early in the American enslavement process. It really isn't.
Well, no, technically it isn't, but what I'm saying is by 1920, let's say, we're going to make the assumption that there were no more slaves in America. Okay, legal slaves, let's say. And what I'm saying is that if you are a person who is a descendant of a great-grandfather or great-grandmother who came from somewhere else around that time, then you suffered, and your family probably suffered from the same thing that my family suffered, who I definitely probably had American slaves in my line, but just because your great-great-great-grandfather wasn't an American slave, your family still suffered from the same system. So
I don't know that you're raising the same argument. I think you're raising a different argument, and it's kind of technical in the sense that who, therefore, qualifies to lay claim to compensation?
Who qualifies should be based on time, not based on biology. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. In other words, if you are a Black person and your family has been here for a certain amount of time, in my opinion, you qualify, even if there is no evidence that there was an actual enslaved person in your family line. That's what I'm trying to say. Because the problem of slavery is not just the actual slavery itself. It's everything that came after it. It's all the screwed-up institutions
that
came after it.
We are having a discussion, and in a sense, it puts the cart before the horse. The first order of business is to find out who would be the beneficiaries of this idea that descendants of slaves. It's too late now to benefit those who were enslaved. So the descendants of slaves are the ones who are, inheritance.
Yeah, I would not accept that. That's what I'm saying. If that's the policy of the ADOS, that reparations should apply only to the direct descendants of American slaves, I wouldn't be supportive of that, no.
Would you be supportive of an African-American whose forebears were from the time of Jamaican uprising, slave uprisings, Nanny, for example? Would you be supportive of any effort organized in Jamaica to do the same thing, to somehow compensate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, of course. Wherever there was Africans put into enslavement, there should be reparations. But that's not what we're talking about. Our discussion is very narrow to the possibility of the American government setting up some type of system of reparations for the black community in America. And for me,
the American government, though. That is not my understanding. It's only the American government.
No, not just the American government. Institutions, businesses, everything. It's not just the American government, but the American government would definitely spearhead it, I think, ultimately. Because if you just had individual institutions doing things, like you said in Chicago, that's an easy way out. That's an easy way out. That doesn't really address the big issue.
Well, you do realize that these discussions have much further to go before coming to a decided approach, and including what the intended results will be. So a way to go. So all of this should be put in the pot and considered. Thanks so much for your call. Ed, I understand you're back.
Yeah, yes, I am. I apologize, but this is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. My brother, you are wrong. And I'm going to tell you why. And it's not opinion-based, it's a fact. The only way that we can logically have a legitimate claim on the world court and in logic is to come as a group with specific parameters that allow us to claim our redress from a government, because the government programs were set up for a specific group of individuals based on race that were in this country. We were systematically pushed out. And if you are a descendant, which is verifiable through chronological, through records, through DNA, which are methods of determining who is ADOS and who is not, not to ostracize anyone, not to push anybody out. The bottom line is we are making a claim, just like the American Indians make a claim, just like the Native Americans make a claim, the Alaskans, the Inuit people, just like the Marbury people in Australia make a claim, just like the Jamaican people in CARICOM make their claim on the British government for enslavement. Make your claim in your country. If you came here voluntarily and you were subject to the oppression that was manifesting in this country, I feel bad for you. I'm with you as far as getting reparations from your aspect, but don't block mine. My people were here. My blood is here in Florence, South Carolina, in Mobile, Alabama. My mother's family goes back generations through there. I am owed a debt by this government for the blood of my people. Get yours from your country. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you. And we have Patricia on the line next. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Patrice, and good afternoon.
Hello.
You know, I have to agree with Ed, and actually I was trying to get on before Ed came back on. I think this conversation has raised a lot of issues, and I can just see this very conversation that we're having right now being used in opposition to the principle of what of the, you know, the goal of reparations. I think it's important that the caller recognize that in every country that was colonized, in every island that was colonized, everybody had to wage their own independence war. And so the fact that reparations would be isolated to African American descendants of slaves does not mean that the same template cannot be used wherever your original lineage is. The principle is that reparations is a debt that is owed. It is a debt that is owed wherever you emanate from, wherever you come from. Wage the war in your home, because that is where the debt is owed, and that is who should pay the debt.
Okay. I, as you see, I went silent there because it was very profound what you just said. And I happen to agree. I agree. Slavery is not, as you intimated, slavery is not consigned only or confined only to the United States or to the Caribbean or this country or that country. It was a global economy. It was a global experience. And so the fight, the struggle has to recognize that and has to take place on that level, knowing that, yes, we are looking at a specific area in our struggle, but we are clear that our struggle is linked to all these other struggles, but they have to wage their struggle too. This is a very complicated thing, but it's, in a sense, it's easy to understand. It's pretty logical. Patricia?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to tie it with the struggle for independence of the African continent. Each country did not wage the struggle at the same time. But what they did was they took strength and courage and leadership and guidance from these countries who gained their independence before they did. And everyone had to wage their own war, clearly with allies, but they had to fight their own struggle. And thus the continent became independent.
Well, we see that before us is a very complex subject that we must come back to again and again to make things clearer and clearer. But it is a must, and we will do it. I want to thank everybody for contributing today so meaningfully, as usual. I am so honored to be in your company. Let's meet again tomorrow and talk some more stuff, because it's Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.